This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Moments before tip-off on Wednesday evening's game between the Utah Jazz and Oklahoma City Thunder, the NBA scrambled to act on news that Jazz star Rudy Gobert had contracted COVID-19.
Utah's no longer on the floor. The Thunder are no longer on its bench. The officials have gone back to the locker room. The fans here in the arena don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on.
You are all safe. And take your time in leaving the arena tonight and do so in an orderly fashion. Thank you for coming out tonight.
For now, no more TV studio audiences in New York and L.A., no more Broadway. Sports officials suspended all upcoming professional hockey, baseball, and basketball events. No March Madness, and Disneyland closed. On Thursday, the president said this.
It's going to go away. It's going to go away. I was watching Scott this morning, and he was saying within 2 months.
And this.
I mean, think of it. The United States, because of what I did and what the administration did with China, we have 32 deaths at this point. 32 is a lot. But when you look at the kind of numbers that you're seeing coming out of other countries, it's pretty amazing when you think of it.
And especially this.
Over the next few days, they're going to have 4 million tests out. And frankly, the testing has been going very smooth. If you go to the right agency, if you go to the right area, you get the test.
If only. South Korea, which discovered its first COVID-19 patient around the same time as the U.S., is testing 10,000 people a day, roughly the same number of people tested in the U.S. total since mid-January. And if we don't know who has the virus, experts say, we can't contain its spread, putting more Americans at risk. On Wednesday, Politico reporter Dan Diamond told Terry Gross that the White House rejected offers from the WHO to share the science behind its tests, saying that America would develop its own tests.
The World Health Organization did have a working test. Someone somewhere made the decision that the U.S. was going to go its own way. And that started a chain reaction of not having a working test and then having these delays for weeks.
There are widespread reports of tests delayed and denied because of shortages of kits and personnel. Also accounts by unnamed sources close to the president that he resisted offers by domestic labs to produce the tests because he didn't like the, quote, optics of national emergency that steeply rising numbers would imply. But the stock market surged when he finally did declare a national emergency Friday. According to McKay Coppins, staff writer at The Atlantic, when the president delivered his national address on Wednesday, a prepared speech from a monitor in a tone that seemed appropriately grave, it was a new turn in his public information campaign.
We declared a public health emergency and issued the highest level of travel warning on other countries as the virus spread its horrible infection.
Yeah, I would say it was a 180-degree pivot, at least in tone, from the way he had been talking about coronavirus. In the past several weeks, every time he talked about it or tweeted about it, it was with a kind of calculated cavalierness. This is no big deal. It's no worse than the flu. And the criticism of his administration's handling of it was a hoax or an effort to destroy his presidency.
Right.
I think that speech on Wednesday night was the first time that we saw him talk about the global pandemic with the gravity that most public health officials wanted to see from him weeks ago.
Kind of Trumpian gravity. He was using that tone that he assumes when he's being, quote, you know, presidential,
right.
Somber and sleepy. It has a kind of rhythmic whine. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like he's trying to hypnotize you. Maybe it was a pivot, but it wasn't materially. You know, Politico has observed he's still reluctant to make a declaration of national emergency because that wouldn't fit into his narrative that this is going to go away by itself and it's not different from the seasonal flu.
From the very beginning, he seemed to handle it in a way that we've seen him handle a lot of other political battles in his presidency, which is that he thought that if he could control the conservative media's treatment of the story, he would be able to keep the political damage to a minimum. Where he miscalculated there is that the public health crisis that we're seeing unfold right now is fundamentally different than a lot of the other episodes of his presidency, in that eventually reality will assert itself, right? It's clearly spreading in the United States. The only real course of action for a president is to have a competent public health response. And so far, his actions have left a lot to be desired.
You talk about what you call Trump's alternate reality, where he fills the air with information that is false or mostly false or inconsistent. The point is not to even create a narrative, but to exhaust anybody who wants clarity and induce them to throw up their hands.
That's right. Scholars who study this stuff actually have a name for it. They call it censorship through noise.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal really isn't to necessarily make people have conviction in a certain set of facts. The goal is to make it so that people throw up their hands and just side with their political tribe. I watched the president's speech on Wednesday night on Fox News so that I could kind of see what the reaction would be right after the speech. And what was amazing to me was how quickly and seamlessly the entire messaging apparatus pivoted. Up until literally like hours before the president's speech, you had Sean Hannity on his radio show musing about how the coronavirus threat was possibly a deep state conspiracy to harm the president.
On immune systems, he said, quote, coronavirus fear mongering by the deep state will go down in history as one of the biggest frauds to manipulate economies, suppress dissent, and push mandated medicines. Maybe true.
And then you had the president give this speech where he acknowledged that it's a serious issue and it needs to be addressed. All of a sudden, you had Sean Hannity talking about this serious pandemic, and this president has taken decisive, aggressive action from the beginning.
Now, from day one, this president took aggressive and even unprecedented steps to prevent the spread and mitigate the impact of what is now a global pandemic. Make no mistakes, in serious situations, truth matters, facts matter, and unfortunately, there's been way too much politicizing of this, too much, well, untruths being told, and actually even some actually weaponizing what is a global pandemic. That all needs to stop. I hope it will.
I mean, frankly, I think Orwellian has become a cliched phrase in the Trump era, but honestly, this was as close to Orwellian as I had ever seen. And what it showed me was that what's going to happen in the days and weeks to come is that you're going to have this concerted effort by the same media apparatus that has been carrying Trump's narrative for the last few weeks. Now, make every effort possible to conceal that that ever happened.
But they can't do that because we still don't have test kits. It's still spreading, and you can blame it on Europeans or, as some of the Republican Party have done, blame it on the coastal states of California and New York. And he still won't have contained it.
The pivot that I'm looking for next in the conservative media is that you're going to start finding scapegoats, whether that's liberal politicians or governors on the coastal states, whether that's immigrants or China, so that the president doesn't incur political damage among his base.
And also damage to the narrative that America first is the only way to solve any problem.
And you saw it with his speech, right? The very first and most dramatic announcement he made was that he was implementing a month-long travel ban from Europe. As long as we can build walls and shut down borders, you know, then we can stay safe. I don't think that's the most important thing that's happening right now, but I do think that the entire project of the Trump presidency has been keeping a certain segment of the country inside this reality that he's created. And I think that that's under threat in a way that it never has been before.
There was another interesting case prior to this speech where Tucker Carlson, without naming names, suggested that perhaps the leaders ought to be taking this more seriously.
People you trust, people you probably voted for, have spent weeks minimizing what is clearly a very serious problem. It's just partisan politics, they say. Calm down. In the end, this is just like the flu, and people die from that every year. Coronavirus will pass, and when it does, we will feel foolish for worrying about it. That's their position. But they're wrong.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson was really interesting. He was actually, for a while, kind of the lonely dissenting voice in the Fox News primetime lineup, making the case that this should be treated as an emergency. It was really kind of an amazing moment where you saw this, you know, right-wing Fox News host pleading with the president to take this seriously. I don't know if that is, you know, the difference maker, but he clearly knows that the president watches. And there was at least one voice in this broader conservative media apparatus trying to get the president's attention.
What about the coverage on the other cable news channels, CNN, MSNBC? Do you have any observations about them, or were they both kind of true to form?
Well, I think, you know, for the most part, they were trying to inform the public about this growing public health crisis and warn about what was happening in other countries and how it could happen here. I do think, though, that, you know, if there's one critique you could make of the mainstream media, it's that for the last several years, we have been dialed up to 10, right? Mm-hmm. We've been covering every episode of the Trump presidency, every scandal, every moment with a sense of urgency. And I think that that makes sense given how, strange and extraordinary the last several years have been. But I do think that it comes at a cost, which is that when a global pandemic happens and we really need to get viewers' attention or our audience's attention and communicate that this is really urgent, I do think there's a certain number of people who are not inside the kind of Trump MAGA bubble, but still who have started to tune out media coverage because they say, well, they treat everything like it's a catastrophe. And, you know, usually things end up being fine.
I think that is true. It's exhausting watching the news. I also think it's infuriating because not only is everything dialed up to 10 or 11, but it's put through a political filter.
Right.
Either the filter of politics or on specialized channels, the filter of the market.
Part of what's happened is that the people who have remained plugged in to the news after years of kind of exhausting political drama are the political junkies. And I do think that there is commercial incentive or an audience incentive happening here where everybody is playing to the people who watch cable news every day instead of necessarily trying to, inform the broader public.
A Quinnipiac poll released this week found that 68% of Democrats are concerned about the virus. About 35% of Republicans were. Does that sound like a public health crisis in the making?
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the most concerning results of the president's messaging, which is that they listen to the president, they listen to Fox News, they listen to Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and the talk radio world. And when they're all saying in unison, this is no big deal, this is no big deal, the media is creating a hysteria to hurt the president, don't let them win. When that's the message that's being beaten into them every single day, they naturally don't take the public health ramifications seriously. They don't think about, you know, canceling vacations or canceling travel or avoiding large gatherings or even washing their hands, right? And so this is one hopefully positive byproduct of the president now starting to change his tone is that this will mean that the president's supporters will start to take him more seriously. But I think, you know, at this point, there's a good chance that the damage has already been done. Sorry.
Well,
that was a very on-message cough.
McKay Coppins is a staff writer at The Atlantic and author of The Wilderness, a book about the battle over the future of the Republican Party.
Coming up on The Meaning of Masks, East and West.
This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.